And now it's time for us to discuss more of these headlines and simple keywords with Adam joining us via Zoom. Good morning, Adam.
Good morning, Lena. It's Friday.
It is Friday. Happy Friday, everyone.
Happy Friday. No special day today, just Friday. Friday itself is a special day.
That suffices. It totally works. Thanks for that. Glad to know that everyone's starting, hopefully, on a chipper note. Adam and I are, apparently. All right, let's get started. We have many headlines to cover, and this is our first pick of the day.
U.S. Chamber of Commerce.
So President Yoon has met with Evan Greenberg, chairman of the U.S. Chamber of Commerce's U.S.-Korea Business Council, and also CEO of global insurance company Chubb. What did they discuss?
Right, so this was Greenberg's first visit to Korea since his election as the ninth chairman of the council last December. The U.S. Chamber of Commerce said the trip focused on expanding Washington's deep commercial ties with Seoul. Yoon expresses gratitude for Greenberg's contributions to the development of U.S.-Korea relations. He noted that Greenberg's father, Maurice Greenberg, a former chairman of AIG, had served in the Korean War and was the fourth chairman of the Korea-U.S. Business Council from 2003 to 2005. He emphasized the crucial role of business community support and contribution in strengthening the economic cooperation and ongoing development of the U.S.-Korea alliance. He urged the council to continue supporting Korean companies in the U.S. He also urged more U.S. companies to consider investing in Korea as well, highlighting his government's efforts to create an optimal investment environment. Now, in response, Greenberg expressed pride in his role and gratitude for the respect shown to Korean War veterans, including his father, by the Korean government and its people. He stated that enhancing the U.S.-Korea security alliance through trade and economic cooperation is essential amid the rapidly changing global situation. He fully supported Yoon's leadership in reducing unnecessary regulations and promoting investments in high-tech sectors to expand the global market. Additionally, he committed to actively supporting mutual investments and cooperation between companies from both countries as well.
On the same day, Greenberg also met with Foreign Minister Cho Tae-ar. Do we know what they discussed?
Right. So Cho praised the growing investments between the two countries, helping to solidify their relationship. He also highlighted the need to minimize uncertainties for businesses, especially concerning incentives under the U.S. Inflation Reduction Act and the CHIPS Act. He also mentioned the importance of establishing a new U.S. professional visa quota for Koreans. Greenberg agreed on the need for a stable environment that facilitates business operations and trade between both nations, and he also expressed his support for the professional visa as well. So there's more personnel going to the U.S., but that could be a bit of a concern for the Korean government because they want to nurture personnel to remain here in the country. So,
But it's a visa, not a green card. I think they're inherently different.
Right.
Visa expires. The idea is they would return to the Korean Peninsula, but maybe, these are all very hypothetical.
Hypothetical, of course. But if they don't renew, but the wish is that maybe they can get some training anyway help out with maybe Korean businesses overseas or American companies, and then get their know-how and technical expertise and implement them here in Korea again in the near future.
Music to the ears of the U.S. Chamber of Commerce authorities. Okay.
But all hypothetical. But of course, Korea will do its part as well to nurture personnel to be used here as well in the country, I suppose.
The nature of it is to be a win-win situation. So how about we'll wait and see? All right, let's move on to our second keyword of the day.
Men's strike briefing.
So the government is resuming the pan-governmental meetings and briefings on striking doctor today after that short election hiatus. What can we expect? Kind of more of the same?
Right. It was a kind of election hiatus in terms of the briefings. There were maybe some speculations that maybe the government would soften its stance when it comes to these striking doctors and their demands. But as we've been reporting since the election, that doesn't really seem to be the case. And more of the same, pretty much. The government is set to hold a briefing at 4 p.m. Eyes are on whether the government will press forward more aggressively with medical reforms. Second Vice Health Minister Peng Min Su will most likely lead the Central Disaster and Safety Countermeasures headquarters meetings. A key meeting hosted by the Prime Minister's office will take place at 2 p.m., focusing on initiating a presidential committee dedicated to medical reform. Since the election, the government has taken a step back by calling off its daily press briefings on doctors' collective action. As part of efforts to seek a breakthrough, a special commission on medical reform under the presidential office is expected to be launched next week so that related parties can negotiate within the consultative body. It'll consist of around 20 people involving medical experts and patients and other members of society as well. It is, however, unclear if doctors and trainee doctors will actually join the committee. There is a bit of backlash in regards to it. Im Yun Tek, for example, the newly elected president of the KMA, told Yonhap that the plan to create a consultative body to build social consensus is absurd, in his words. He stressed that the dialogue should only involve the government and the medical community and not any other third party. And with Im set to officially take office next month, resistance to government policies is expected to intensify.
Ideally, we would think a third party would require a different perspective, help, you know, find a middle ground. But who decides on who gets to be part of the third party? That becomes contentious too, right? What is only fair? Okay, we'll wait and see. For now, it seems the stalemate continues. Let's move on to our third keyword of the day.
Grain bill.
So a parliamentary committee dominated by the Democratic Party has directly tabled a controversial grain bill that will require the government to purchase surplus rice to a plenary session. It was previously vetoed by the president. They want to get this done before the 21st National Assembly comes to an end. What's the latest?
Yeah, so of course, it was met with a lot of opposition from the ruling party because they basically railroaded this bill to the plenary session. Out of 19 committee members, 11 DP lawmakers and an independent lawmaker voted for the motion. Seven ruling PPP members had walked out in protest, kind of scenes that we often see in these kind of committee meetings, unfortunately. Now, the revision to the Grain Management Act prompts the government to take active measures to stabilise prices of grain, mainly rice, to help farmers. That is the aim anyway. Such measures include purchasing surplus grain or selling a government-managed inventory of grains. Now, the bill was referred to the Legislation Committee for discussion back in February, according to customary procedures, but parliamentary rules also state that a bill pending in the Legislation Committee for more than 60 days can be directly referred to a plenary session if over three-fifths of the original Standing Committee members agree, and that's what's happened this time round. Now, this is how the opposition-controlled Agricultural Committee was able to push through the referral of the bill. It's been slightly modified after its original version was vetoed by the president last year. The PPP said the bill could bring about a host of side effects of government intervention in the market, because that's pretty much what it is. It's the government buying rice when it runs short, or surplus of rice rather. And of course that can be seen as government intervention in the market, which not just the ruling party but a lot of businesses and economic experts say can be a bit bad. Now, it noted that mandatory government purchases of excess rice could lead to overproduction, falling rice prices, increased fiscal burdens and equity issues as well. Of course, if the government is buying stuff, there's that whole issue of who owns what arguments come into play. Now, the DP reiterated the need for a revision, saying the fluctuating price of grains is threatening farming operations. So, yeah, very controversial bill. Basically railroaded to the plenary session, and once it gets there, of course, it is, again, the majority is the opposition bloc. So it may, it looks likely to be railroaded in the National Assembly as well.
But I mean, there's also political pressure because the 22nd National Assembly will begin its session come next month. And before that, they want to see if, you know, other, maybe some select PPP members might be on board with controversial bills like this one. And there's been pressure for, I guess, other lawmakers to land on the same page as some of these DP lawmakers. We'll wait and see. I mean, it's about free market versus when should the government intervene. The idea of purchasing these, you know, oversupply of rice is, it's certainly a short-term solution, but long-term, as you can imagine, is probably not sustainable.
Yeah, I mean, there is that kind of criticism and kind of concerns that maybe it's just a quick fix
For now,
that
yeah.
will, yeah, for now, that could have actually adverse effects long term. But of course, yeah. But this isn't the only bill that the committee and the UDP has railroaded to the plenary session. It's part of a few others. So, of course, that only escalates the kind of political tensions across both across the aisle.
We took a breather for like a day, didn't we?
All right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Back to normal, I guess.
Nature of politics. Let's move on to our fourth keyword of the day.
Lights removed.
So North Korea has recently removed street lights and other facilities along roads connecting to the south. This appears to be a show of Pyongyang's determination to cut off ties with Seoul, sort of dimming the lights literally on the hopes of a peaceful reunification.
Yeah, so this is kind of, there was a piece by the Wall Street Journal, I think it was, that say that this is kind of a new form of protest by Kim Jong-un against South Korea. But it certainly is looking that way. The South Korean military said its surveillance caught North Korea taking down streetlights lining the roads connecting the Kaesong Industrial Complex and Mount Kumgang. The Kyungi Line Road was completed in 2004 to facilitate travel for personnel in Kaesong, which is now shuttered. However, the road has been unused, of course, since the closure in 2016, and of course, the withdrawal of South Korean personnel from the Inter-Korean Liaison Office in early 2020 due to the COVID-19 pandemic. The Tongye Line Road, previously busy with tour buses to Mount Kumgang and occasionally used for transporting aid to the north, also has not been used in recent years. Now, this comes after January, where North Korea was seen laying landmines along the same roads as well. Of course, these moves are seen as actions that reflect North Korea's stance of having basically no further interest in inter-Korean relations and cutting off any inter-Korean communication. Kim Jong-un characterized the inter-Korean relationship as one that is hostile and belligerent during a key party meeting at the end of last year. Also in a speech at a Supreme People's Assembly in mid-January, he stated that steps should be taken to completely sever the Korean sections of the Kyungi Line beyond repair, in his words, among other other measures to thoroughly cut off inter-Korean connectivity in the border areas. Seoul's unification ministry says that all still owes repayments for the roads because the projects were funded by the South Korean government. So they're not happy with the fact that they've paid for these roads, but then the North Koreans are to basically stripping it of its streetlights, so basically damaging property, basically, in their view.
All right, we'll leave it there for now so we can move on to our final keyword of the day.
Forex volatility.
So an official at the IMF says the recent depreciation of the Korean won against the dollar does not pose a significant threat to the Korean economy. Sounds hopeful. Let's provide context. Tell us more.
Yeah, so downplaying concerns of what the Korean government is having at the moment, of course, the Middle Eastern conflict leading rising global oil prices has, of course, contributed to these fluctuating exchange rates and depreciation of the Korean won. These remarks were made by Krishna Srinivasan, director of the IMF's Asia and Pacific Department. He pointed out that Korea has limited currency mismatches and manageable inflation levels. He explained that currency mismatch, which occurs when there's significant difference between foreign currency debts and assets, could amplify economic shocks caused by currency fluctuations. However, he reassured that Korea doesn't have the kind of mismatches that would make large currency fluctuations a serious concern. He added that in general, Asian countries have experienced less severe inflation compared to places like the US and have ended their economic tightening sooner, which has caused their currencies to depreciate due to the growing interest rate differences with the US. And he advised policymakers to focus more on their own economic conditions rather than worrying too much about what the US Federal Reserve does. He stressed that Korea should keep its monetary policy focused on controlling inflation, which is still higher than desired. The policy should remain tight until inflation is back to the target level, he said. Discussing the regional economic outlook, Srinivasan projected that the Korea-Asia-Pacific The Asia Pacific area would grow by 4.5% this year, which is an improvement from previous forecasts. For Korea, he sees positive momentum for exports, especially due to high global demand for semiconductors, though he expects domestic consumption to increase only slowly.
All right. Thank you very much, Adam, for this week's worth of coverage. Have a great weekend.
You too. Have a great weekend. I'll see you next week.
If you're listening to our program using the podcast service, just a reminder that we do go live Monday through Friday, 7 a.m. Korea Standard Time. So tune in and help us make the show more informative by giving us your input. See you bright and early on Good Morning Seoul.